The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
David Grimm, editor of Science's online daily news site, Science Now, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news, including a story about how trust is only skin deep. Something about attractiveness here, Dave?
Exactly, Rob. You know, it's probably not a stretch to say that attractive people tend to have an easier time in life. And that's not just anecdotal. That's actually been shown in scientific studies that attractive people are frequently judged more trustworthy and honest than less attractive people. And they seem to earn more money, too. And in this new study, the researchers wanted to see, are there other benefits of being attractive? They wanted to see if attractive people were more trusting of others if the other people knew that they were attractive.
So attractive people then are more trusting of somebody else when they know that other person can see them.
Exactly. In other words, if I think that you think that I'm attractive, then I think you're going to be more trustworthy. It's kind of a strange concept, but it all gets back to this idea of, do attractive people not only do better in society, but do they also feel that society is going to treat them better because they're attractive?
How did they test this?
Well, the researchers played this economic game with about 80 psychology students at the University of Aberdeen in the United Kingdom. And what they had those students do was they had them come in and they said, okay, you're going to play a game with an opponent. And they gave the students two options. They said, either we will give you a sort of a small pot of money and you can divide that evenly between you and your opponent, or you can trust your opponent with a larger pot of money and have that opponent divvy up that money. And the idea is, if you really trust your opponent and you trust that opponent to divvy up the money equally, then you're going to get more money in the long run because that opponent has a bigger pot rather than you just sort of divvying up this smaller pot. And then they threw attractiveness into the equation. They had students rate themselves on attractiveness, but they also had a panel of sort of outside experts also rate these students' attractiveness. And those were actually pretty well correlated. So if the student found themselves attractive, oftentimes the outside panel would find them attractive as well. And here's what the researchers found. The most attractive people, in fact, the prettiest top third, as judged by this outside panel, were 69% more likely to trust their opponent than the people that were in the bottom third of attractiveness.
And that's enough to say it's statistically significant?
That's statistically significant. And it goes back to this idea that if people think that other people think that they're attractive, then they're going to be more trusting of those other people.
So indeed, it's not about how I feel about my own attractiveness.
No, it's really about how you feel about how others feel about your attractiveness.
Okay. So what other stories have we brought with you this week?
Well, Rob, from trusting other people as they see you to seeing through walls, this next story is about using radio waves to monitor somebody's movement from behind a wall.
This doesn't sound exactly new. I mean, radar and things like that have been around for some time now.
Right, Rob, radar has been around for a long time. This is similar to radar, but it's actually a lot more versatile. With radar, you're thinking about, you know, these big devices, maybe something on a ship or in a plane that's going to help you detect objects. But with this new approach, it's really about seeing objects inside these other objects. So, for example, if you had a burglar in your house, how would you know where that burglar was in the house or where he or she was moving around if you were outside the house? Same thing if there was, say, a house fire or a building fire. Could you set something up around this building very quickly that would allow you to see if there was people trapped inside the building? And that's what this new study is about, trying to figure out if there's a way to do that. And the technology that these researchers are investigating is based on a phenomenon called multipath fading. And you may have experienced this. If you're in a room where an AM radio is playing, sometimes when people walk around the room, it can cause static on the radio. And that's because our bodies absorb radio waves. And these researchers said, well, is there a way we can actually utilize this multipath fading to our advantage? And what they did was they set up this network of pole-mounted, cell phone-sized transceivers, which send out and receive radio waves. And what they found is if they set this up, you know, in a building-like setting, they could actually follow a person moving around inside this building to an accuracy of about 1 meter.
So some sort of complicated computer algorithm then takes in all this data and sort of figures out where this multipath fading is happening. Is that it?
Exactly.
Clearly, there are applications. When are we likely to see something like this on the market?
Well, this is still in its very early phases, and it does have some Achilles heels. One thing is that because it's radio, its frequency can be jammed. So if you're talking about using it for home security, all a burglar would have to do was jam the signal before they went into the house. So it's still a lot of obstacles to be overcome. But what's really promising about this technology is it's very cheap. You're talking about very simple devices and very cheap devices that you would need to surround a house with. So you're not talking about something that would be as expensive as something like radar or infrared. And that makes it very promising for commercialization.
Okay, so last story. What's this last one about?
Well, Rob, from beaming radio waves through a building to beaming lasers into the brain of a fly, this last story is about creating false memories.
In flies?
In flies, and potentially one day in humans.
Sounds dangerous.
Well, if you're a fly in this study, it is pretty dangerous. Here's what the study's about, Rob. You know, if you, when you're very young, you probably, or maybe, and I probably did, stuck your finger into an electrical outlet. And you probably only did that once, because once you did it and you got that shock, you never did it again. You saw an electrical outlet and you said, that is something I do not want to stick my finger into. And researchers are able to do something very similar with flies. Flies tend to have a preference for certain odors. And so what researchers did was they put flies in this chamber and they pumped in one of two odors. And some flies preferred one odor and some flies preferred the other. And then what the researchers did was they did something very similar to the sticking your finger into an electrical outlet example. If a fly moved towards, say, odor A, they would shock the fly. And from then on out, or at least for a few hours, as long as the fly's memory lasts, the flies, when that odor was pumped in, the flies would run away or fly away from that odor. They would really avoid it. They would say, that odor's bad because when I smell that, I get shocked. And then the next thing the researchers did, which was really interesting, is they said, can we make flies learn their lessons about these odors without actually administering the electric shock? So in other words, to take the example back to humans, could you learn not to stick your finger into that electrical outlet without first getting that negative reinforcement of the shock? Is there a way to give the flies the memory that these odors are bad without actually having them have the painful experience first?
And they used lasers to do this?
They used lasers. What they did was they put this molecule, which is called ATP, which is a source of cellular energy, they put it in these sort of molecular cage in the fly's brain. And what the laser does is it releases ATP from this cage, and the ATP activates neurons that release dopamine, and in flies, dopamine is the signal for averse memory. So, you know, when the flies get that shock, their neurons release dopamine, and that dopamine tells the flies, your very small brain, basically, this is a bad thing. So what the researchers did is they repeated the odor experiment. But this time, when the fly got near a particular odor, the researchers didn't shock them. They just zapped their brain with lasers, which doesn't hurt the fly, but it released this ATP and caused this whole cellular cascade, which basically told the fly, this odor is bad. So the fly didn't get any sort of negative shock or anything. Just all of a sudden, something happened in their brain that said, hey, this is a bad odor. You should avoid it.
This molecular cage with the ATP was somehow inserted beforehand.
Was inserted beforehand, exactly.
So a kind of a brain shock then?
No, it just caused a memory, but it wasn't actually a physically unpleasant experience.
I imagine it's pretty important, though, to know where to put that molecular cage with the ATP, or doesn't it matter where you inject that?
Well, the researchers, you know, played around a lot at first. They put these molecular cages in a variety of places in the fly's brain and figured out which regions were most responsive. And actually doing that helped them narrow down a region that just had 12 neurons in it that were really responsible for this learning behavior. And even though flies have very small brains or brain-like structures, they're still talking about thousands and thousands of neurons. So just to be able to narrow it down to 12 is a really important advance in its own right. But the really intriguing thing about all this study is, you know, obviously, ultimately, Rob, researchers want to know, you know, will this have any applications for humans? And one idea is, say, you're reading a Shakespeare sonnet or trying to remember something in your car manual. Could scientists do something that would help you remember that more, or potentially even giving you memories like they gave the flies that they didn't have before? It's all very interesting and very controversial stuff, but this is an interesting first step.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for Science Now or on the policy blog, Science Insider?
Well, Rob, for Science Now, we've got a couple of interesting neuroscience stories. Speaking of the brain, we're looking into a story about memories and sleepless nights. Why do our memories seem to be worse if we haven't gotten a good night's sleep? And another story about how certain cells in our ear seem to process painful sounds. So if you're at a very loud rock concert and you've got that ringing in your ears afterwards, scientists think they may have found out why that happens. And for the science policy blog, Science Insider, we're looking into a story about a former scientist who's just been accused of espionage and what's going on with that and what kind of research he was doing before he was arrested. And also swine flu, as you may have noticed, is creeping back into the news. And we've got some analysis this week about why younger people seem to be more susceptible to H1N1 than people over 65. So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science news, plus find a link to the science policy blog, Science Insider, at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.